Welcome to the Secure Serengeti. We're your hosts, David Spartiger and Matthew Keener. Stop what you're doing and subscribe to our podcast. Leave us an awesome five-star review and follow us at SerengetiSec on Twitter.
We're here to talk more about cybersecurity. Each episode will focus on a specific topic of interest to the community. And today, we're doing a movie review, trying something new. The movie is called Who Am I? And it is on Netflix.
And as usual, the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are ours and ours alone and do not reflect the views or opinions of our employers.
In RFC 1619, Linux has been updated so that when a millennial types "Who am I?" on a command line, it responds a unique and precious unicorn to prevent them from logging out in tears. So what is this movie, David, since you suggested it?
All right. So as Matt said, the movie is Who Am I? And it's available on Netflix. So this is a German language movie. It was produced by Sony, so it's pretty high quality.
Yeah, that was really the hardest part for me, was I had to spend like 3 weeks learning German before I could watch it. It was pretty rough.
It only took you 3 weeks.
A little bit of a language savant.
Kind of like Indiana Jones, I guess. You know, it's pretty good. It actually kind of reminded me of some other German language movies with subtitles that were of similar quality that were good. There's a classic Run, Lola, Run that was good. The Lives of Others, which was about a decade ago, was really awesome. And then Downfall, which is about the same time period as well. So
I've heard of Run, Lola, Run, but I haven't heard of the other one.
Yeah, so the second one is about the East German Stasi spying on people. And then Downfall is a supposed recreation of Hitler's final days in the bunker at the end of World War II.
Oh, you know what? I have heard of that one. Yeah.
I bet you've seen the memes. There's a particularly good one where Hitler is chewing out his staff because his Xbox Live account was shut down.
No, I've seen that for other things. Yeah. For various, you know, first world problems that Hitler is very upset about.
Yeah. Hilarious. Do a search for that on the internet. You'd be cracking up. But yeah, if reading foreign language movies with subtitles is something you can tolerate, certainly check out this movie. And these other couples that we mentioned were pretty good. But this is focused on a hacker named Benjamin. And Who Am I is his hacker handle. And if you're unfamiliar with Linux, Who Am I, all one word, is a Linux command that returns the current user. And if you type out Who Am I and it's spaced out, it's actually Am I is actually a switch for the Who command, which shows the login user. And something I just found out prior to after watching this movie, when I was looking at the Who command, is there's another switch that says Mom Likes, Who Mom Likes, and it returns the same result as Who Am I. I thought that was pretty funny. So this character, Benjamin, it goes through a little bit of his background. He started programming when he was 14. He's very isolated, considers himself an outsider, loser, a freak. He basically lives on Ritalin, and the internet is where he felt a sense of belonging. And particularly on the dark.
It's interesting the way that they characterize the darknet. They characterize it as a subway car, where everybody's kind of sitting around on a subway car and everybody's wearing masks and some of them are ridiculous. It's just a weird, weird visualization of the darknet. So there's some things I like about it. Like each subway car is individual, which does kind of set up like each forum, you know, you have to get into it. They're private forums. But I don't know if I like the idea of like a single subway car. I don't know. I don't know if they just went with that because it was kind of grungy and cool, or if that's the only set they had access to, or I don't know. I don't know. Your thoughts on how they visualize that?
I wonder if it also has something to do with Berlin itself. Because I don't know, at least in Europe, travel by train is pretty big over there. And, you know, in London, they call it the underground. And I'm sure what Berlin calls their subway. But there may be a certain stigma associated with the Berlin subway that it made sense to make that kind of analogy. That's one of the things that when you're watching some foreign films,
that's fair.
There's certain nuances that you're not going to get as an American because you don't live there or you're not from that culture.
That's fair. Yeah, there are some things that definitely kind of made sense and there were others that didn't.
So apparently on the darknet, there's a hacker called Mr. X that Benjamin looks up to. And Mr. X apparently speaks English. So I'm pretty sure, at least from the beginning, that he's probably an American, most likely. And Benjamin tries to live by Mr. X's three rules, which no system is safe, aim for the impossible, and have fun in cyberspace and meat space.
And those are so teenage. Like those are such like teenage hacker rules.
Yeah.
That's what your 17-year-old thinks is super meaningful.
Right. And it ties back to the Hackers, the original Hackers movie, Hackers, with Angelina Jolie, where they had the Hacker Manifesto. It's pretty It's pretty terrible, but it's entertaining, but not believable. It's kind of funny. There's a scene towards the beginning of the movie where Angelina Jolie gets a new laptop and has a 28.8 modem in it. And they start gushing about how great how fast the 28.8 modem is. It's pretty funny. But particularly this last one, this have fun in cyberspace and meet space, influences the way that Benjamin approaches things. And there's a college girl that he has this infatuation with that needs to pass some exam. So he decides what he's going to do is he's going to break into the college server and steal the answers to this exam that she needs to get through. And
things boys do for girls.
Yeah, complete idiots. And this really sets the stage for the rest of the movie where he gets caught doing this. And then he meets someone else who is also doing community service with him, which he was set to 50 hours. So this is where he meets Max, who kind of sets him on the path for the rest of the movie. And the whole issue with the girl at this point, I think they take this girl that he's infatuated with and they string her throughout the entire film. And quite frankly, she could have been cut right after that scene, to be honest. The love interest was very tacked on, I thought, and not well thought through. She is kind of the impetus for the fight that leads to the climax of the movie. But I think you could have used any other trope or any other thing in place of that fight
These are a bunch of nerds. These are a bunch of nerds. They're going to make some kind of misstep that could have caused a fight.
Yeah, right.
I mean, they're a bunch of humans. They're going to make a misstep that could have, I didn't even have to call them nerds. I found the romantic subplot annoying. I didn't feel like it really added anything to the movie. It was very typical kind of nerdy white male pines for a girl that's, you know, too good for him in some way. But what's weird is usually they do a good job of picking somebody that, I mean, usually in movies like this, at least in American movies like this, they pick somebody that is very obviously out of his league. I don't know. I'm thinking Scott Pilgrim versus the World, where they pick like Michael Cera. Like they usually pick like really deficient male leads. And then they pick like super attractive female leads. But in this case, both of them were just average. So it was like, oh, well, she's not really that much out of his league. And he's not really that, like she calls him a freak. He doesn't really look like a freak. He didn't really act that much like a freak either.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, other than being super awkward.
Yeah. You don't get to see his entire growing up, but they made it seem like he was always the kid left out.
Yeah. Yeah. They made it more like just socially awkward, not really.
As a matter of fact, Max speculates that he was so boring, he was not even worth being beat up.
Right. Yeah. Specifically, he calls that out. Yeah. They didn't. Yeah. The her calling him a freak, it was just very weird. Although, given that he's telling all those descriptions of that were to the agent, mm-hmm. does make him possibly an unreliable narrator, especially what we find out later. Oh, spoilers a whole. There may be spoilers in this. So if you're already bought into this, you should probably pause the podcast and go watch the movie. It's only an hour and 45 minutes. It's not one of the super long ones.
Right. It's not like the unbearable lightness of being or something like that, because it actually goes along at a pretty good pace too. The pacing was pretty good in the movie.
There was a couple slow points, but it was usually around the romantic subplot where I found myself losing attention and then they would get right back into it.
Yeah. So you could skip those.
Yep. Absolutely can. Really? I totally did.
No real value in them.
Just like life.
Yep. Yeah. As those freaks have figured out. But of course, meeting Max while doing community service really leads him down the guarded path toward escalating levels of mischief until they get into the real shit with real legit dangerous people. So Max introduces him to two other guys who end up rounding out this four-person hacking crew, which they called Clay. Clowns laughing at you. So Max is the leader, and he's really the specialist in social engineering. And then there's Stefan, who they call the software guy. And then there's Paul, who they call the hardware guy. And then there's Ben, who they claim is an expert at machine code.
Hold on. Let's go back to Max real quick. Sure. Really liked the social engineering example they did with the donuts.
Oh, yeah. That was good.
Yeah. But he just walks in and he grabs an empty box out of a trash can and a receipt and storms in and looks at the receipt and is like, you didn't give me my two chocolate donuts. Yeah, and they gave him the donuts.
Yeah. He said that they shorted him two donuts out of 10. He said he paid for 10 and got 8. So he goes
totally plausible.
Yep. So he goes in and complains, and they end up giving him the two donuts.
Yeah, so it's easier to just get him out of there. There was a busy shop. They were full of people. They didn't want to make a scene. But it was a great example. It was a great example of social engineering.
Yep. And they gave the two donuts to a homeless guy because they were not going to eat out of a box that had been in a dumpster.
Yeah, he didn't really care about the donuts. It was about the illustration.
Right.
So, but anyways, back to Ben and the machine code. They kept calling it machine code, but I don't feel like it was machine code. It didn't look like assembly. It didn't look like machine code. It looked like he was just doing bash or normal OS level code.
Yeah. And at one point, you see him executing EXEs. So I think what they were trying to do here by saying he was the machine code specialist was distinguish between the software and the machine code. And that distinction was actually probably a more subtle distinction that us in the security world might recognize as one was the tool guy. Stefan was the tool guy. He built tools. And then Ben was the guy who produced the exploits that got them the initial access. And then they'd execute Stefan's tools to do whatever it is that they wanted to do.
Yeah. So he's like the operating system guy and the exploit guy. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that would have been a too subtle distinction probably for most people to get, but saying he was software and he was machine code probably made it easier for normies to get the difference.
You know, and that may be another cultural thing, like you're saying, like a translation thing where, because OS and operating system, maybe the translation is machine. Maybe we were taking it as a strict translation and it was not.
Could be. Because I actually was focused on reading more than I was listening. Although I know some German words.
Still, it seemed like fairly real code. Although I'll point out that the hacking was accelerated by like 10 times. Like when they set him down to shut down the power to the neighborhood.
Yeah, I think what they were doing, they were kind of like compressing time. I think really.
Yeah, you probably had to. Like, you're not going to sit down and have him spend 4 hours, you know, running Nmap against everything and then, you know, figuring out where the logins are available for the system. And yeah.
Right.
Doing all the recon and yeah.
Yeah. So
basically, fun as that is.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's the thing that everybody Monday had seen the movie for, that part.
Yeah.
But after Max introduces Ben, the other two, he basically sits him down at a computer and asks him to demo his skills for him. And in doing so, he shuts down the power to the entire neighborhood in a kind of dramatic scene at a party.
And just from the command line without actually like going to any website or anything, didn't do any recon. He just flipped in, just shuts down the power.
Like you do.
Like you do.
But it was at least a much more believable demo than Hugh Jackman's in Swordfish, which is a little bit ludicrous. Even though I mean, as many people, I know a lot of people hate Swordfish, but I actually really like that movie.
I don't remember very much about it.
Yeah.
It's probably for the best.
Yeah, especially that ending sequence at the bank, I really like. But of course, Swordfish is like hugely over the top and not anything remotely realistic. Ooh,
I do remember his workstation in Swordfish with the improbably spaced monitors.
Yeah. Yeah, so nothing about Swordfish is 100% unrealistic, makes virtually no sense at all, but entertaining movie. Whereas this movie seemed to be much more accurate and much more realistic. So once Ben gets into the crew, they start doing these pranks. And the very first one, they print a fake ID to get into an NBD meeting, which is a political group over there. And I think this was a dig at the National Democratic Party of Germany, which has been accused of being a bunch of neo-Nazis. And based on what I read about them, they're at least a bunch of racist, if not actual Nazis. So it's a pretty entertaining sequence about what they do once they get in there and make fun of Nazis. And
then
they, yeah, it's pretty funny. We won't spoil that here. Yeah, you can watch the movie.
You have to go watch it just for that.
But after that, they did it with a series of pranks. They break into the network at some financial news show, and they end up displaying the middle finger on a stock ticker. They break into a pharmaceutical company, and they program the lights in the building to display "We kill animals" on the side of the building, which is in English, which I thought that was kind of interesting. This is a German language film in Berlin, and yet they would do this in English on the side of the building.
So I feel like they actually switched to English a couple times. There were a couple times where I was reading, like you were talking about, reading the subtitles, but I was like, wait, I understood that. I don't know if, and is German turning into like a mixed language with like English
I don't think so. I think it's just that English is so pervasive and virtually everybody in Germany knows English that every once in a while, it's almost like saying, you know, in English, you might say,
hey, amigo, how's it going?
Right. Or dang, what the heck is that French word for? I don't know what. Je ne sais quoi. Right. So, you know, most English speakers know that
phrase.
That's
a certain je ne sais quoi. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So I think it's similar with English over there where, you know, virtually everybody knows a phrase or knows enough English that occasionally saying something in English doesn't sound too unusual.
Another couple hundred years and we're all just going to be speaking a weird melange of languages.
Esperanto.
Yeah. And we're all going to be a nice light brown.
Coffee. I mean, it is the color.
Nice coffee color. Yeah.
Right. So they start escalating their pranks, really hoping to get MRX's attention. And he pretty much says, you guys are just script fees and not worth my attention at all, which pisses these guys off because they're all big fans of this guy. And they don't really talk about all of MXR's exploits, but apparently he's supposed to be awesome. And they really want to be given praise from this guy.
Well, which is interesting because maybe he doesn't do any exploits. Like, it's possible that he's doesn't actually do anything.
Well, it doesn't really matter that they still.
It's all made up.
Attention.
You're right. It's all made up anyway. So, like, it matters.
Yeah, but I mean, this is all similar pranks and stuff, kind of like not along the same lines as all the pranks that you saw in the Hackers movie with Angelina Jolie. But after they fail to get his attention, they decide what they're going to do is they're going to attack the federal intelligence, which sounds pretty scary. But their security doesn't seem to be as good as you would think. But they start off, this is one of the things that I liked about the movie is that it wasn't just about hacking, that you're just going to do everything. You get out in front of a computer and you could hack anything anywhere. They start off by actually going and dumpster diving at the shredding warehouse for this organization. So the organization, having done some work with the government, I'm familiar with this kind of thing. I think the security here was a lot laxer than you would think. But when you have to shred a lot of documents, you have these large trucks that will come to organizations and get loaded up with documents to be shredded. And then they will take them somewhere to be shredded. So what they do is they follow this shredding dump truck from the federal intelligence place to where they're going to do the shredding, and they end up dumping all these documents into a big pile before it goes and gets shredded. And these guys,
such a huge pile.
Oh, it's huge. And these guys are digging through all this trash in order to try to identify something that's going to help get them in. So what they were able to do was they were able to get a list of names by digging through this trash.
Yeah. They found a greeting card.
A birthday card.
Yeah. It was in German.
So with this birthday card, they were able to craft a phishing email to a user or to a person from someone they knew with a malicious link in it. And this individual that they ended up phishing had the ability to create access cards for the cleaning crew. So they used her access to create the access cards they needed to get into the building and get around the building.
And this was kind of weird to me because I know that a lot of penetration testing teams do this, but do real criminals tend to mix remote and physical penetration testing? I don't think I've seen any articles that have described how actual criminals do physical penetration.
I don't know, but one would assume that they can. Yeah. You know, there was a TV show called Tiger Team that was on about 15 years ago where this red team did this mix. It was really good, but only lasted like 6 episodes or something. And I think anything you'd assume that a physical red team could do, there's no reason why a criminal team can't do it. Just really depends on how bold they want to be.
So is this just like a represent an unused avenue that attackers just haven't gotten into yet?
Well, I think that it's an unused avenue that's too risky that most criminals are probably not going to execute on, but yeah, could be if they wanted to.
Because I know for example, the big place that they use people is they hire the cash mules to go cash out. And then, you know, send them a percentage of the money that they cash out.
Right.
But it'd be interesting to see if they branch out into the physical pen testing too. I noticed the flipping hoodies everywhere. just hoodies. And once they were inside, they took off their masks.
Yeah, it seemed unwise.
I know you added in here, they deleted the surveillance video, but there's no guarantee that someone's not going to see them. There were guards inside moving around.
Right.
And if they've got bad visibility in the mask, they should have picked better masks. It's just, yeah. Yeah.
But so they break in with these access cards. They access the computer at the front security desk, which I think is interesting that a lot of people aren't thinking about either. That, you know, if you have a company that has a reception desk or a security desk that's right up there up front where that interacts with the public, you know, unless that's under physical surveillance all the time, it could be possible for someone just to take a second and step back there and stick in a thumb drive or stick in a hardware keylogger on the keyboard or something like that. And I think that's something that a lot of people don't consider when they're considering the security of their network is the physical security of certain hardware systems. I know after Target was hacked, I walked into a Target and they had a kiosk that had a computer plugged into their network where the whole thing was physically accessible. And I walked over there and I picked up the monitor and I was looking at it and I set it down. I looked at the machine, turned it around, put it back, and no one said a word to me at all that I was doing this. So I think this is something that's very overlooked that people should take into consideration.
It's kind of like what they did at the NBD where he walked up to the front and messed with the computer up front and pretending to be working on the microphone cord.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
But something else, I think they also gloss over a lot of the research these guys did as well prior to executing this attack, because they showed them going to the building and all of them seemed to know exactly where they were going, how long it was going to take them to get there, what they needed to do when they got there, what access they needed and all that. It seemed to be well orchestrated, but they really didn't spend any time on showing that they had done all this research and everything before they got there. So they
break that part's in boring. So
yeah. Well, they could have done some kind of fancy montage or something.
Like a training montage, but a research montage.
Right. But what they do is they stick a program on. I guess this was probably sent to the print servers.
Yep. It's it mentions it specifically in the command line when he's running it. It says something about send print job or something like that.
Yeah. So they end up printing their logo to old printers in the entire building until the printers run out of paper.
And you know that that's going to go on the case. They're going to be like, I ran so many pieces of paper. It's going to cost, you know, $1 a piece of paper at government prices, you know, went through so many ink cartridges.
Yep. Exactly.
$5,000 an ink cartridge. Look at that. $10 million in damages.
Yeah, exactly. At least they wouldn't in America, for sure, because I've seen that exact same kind of thing. But also when they're in there setting up Ben steals what he calls encrypted data or an encrypted file.
Behind his friend's back, they had all agreed that they weren't going to take anything. They were just going to come in and do this printed logo thing, and that was it.
Yeah, but he decides that he's going to do this thing. I'm not sure exactly. They don't really get into his mindset about why he did it. He just does. So he's doing this file.
They were talking before about the MRX, the Mr. X, wanting to impress Mr. X. So,
yeah, I suppose that might be just it. But it turns out that this encrypted file is a list of informants. So he gives it to Mr. X to impress him after he gets into a fight with these guys and decides he's going to show them. So he gives Mr. X this file, which turns out that Mr. X is actually a member of a Russian mafia hacking crew called Friends.
How ironic. What an ironic name.
Yeah, and Friends is spelt with the number 13 in place of the ID.
How hackery.
Yep, pretty witty. So it turns out that a member of this hacking crew, Friends, is actually a government informant, and his name was on that list. And that dude shows up with a bullet in the head. Now, this Friends crew is supposedly three guys and an unknown member, which turns out to be this Mr. X or MRX. And the guy that gets shot in the face, he's like a 20-something-year-old dude with dreads and everything. You know, what you would want to picture a hacker to be. And the other two dudes are like 50-year-old mafia-looking guys, wear suits and carry guns. And it just seems like this is really weird.
Are they the members of Friends, or are they just muscle?
No, they're supposed to be the other two parts of Friends.
Are they? That's ridiculous.
Yeah, because at the end, they catch them.
Oh, okay. That is ridiculous. So I feel like that one guy was the actual like hacker and the other two were the mafia guys with the guns to the back of his head being like, all right.
Well, I kind of thought about that too, but they had hacker names, which they that they give them at the beginning of the movie. So that scene, I don't know, the whole three guys in this mafia hacking crew, the makeup of the crew was kind of weak, I thought. They could have done better on that. So after they do this, and this guy ends up getting killed, and it's all over the news, they start freaking out that, you know, they've really stepped across the line here, and, you know, they're in over there. So they burn the place, they burn it down. They destroy all their hard drives. They set fire to the place they've been hanging out at, and they basically kind of go on the run. And they end up at this library where they almost get caught trying to contact Mr. X in order to get back at him or get a hold of him and use him as leverage with the police. After which time they decide what they're going to do is actually hack the Euro, which is, I guess, European police.
Well, they decide not to. They're going to do that because they decide to make a deal with MRX to try. They try to get in with MRX to. That's so what they're going to try and do is they're going to try and get in with MRX, and they're going to give him back a Trojanized set of information that's going to Trojan him so that they can get information on his computer, and they're going to give Europol that information and try and trade for them.
Right.
Yeah.
So needless to say, that doesn't work out. But they need to break into the police headquarters to do that. So Benjamin uses a social engineering attack against the guards to get back into, or to get into Europol, where he places a duplicate Wi-Fi AP, which is designed in order to mirror the actual local Wi-Fi for the Europol building.
Yeah, and the Wi-Fi that he puts under the table is like this big chunky thing with a big glowing light. Super obvious, and right. Someone would have seen it immediately or very, very soon.
Oh, boy. Right. And he called the evil twin attack. And, you know, I've been to multiple places before where they run covert Wi-Fi and you have, or you should have, a WIPS, a wireless IPS. And one of the things that WIPS should be doing is looking for duplicate APs for your corporate access point, and disassociating any of your machines that attempt to connect to it to prevent them from getting compromised by logging into this AP. And depending on how you've got your WIPs configured and where you've got them configured, you might even be able to use that to triangulate where that AP is at. And if it's inside your building, then you can find it and shut it down.
Yep. And then someone connects to his evil twin, and then they get access, and then they kind of gloss over the whole, you know, installing the Trojan and Europol, et cetera. And then they move on to go to another dark room where they use a key into another subway car. And then when he tries to give his poison pill to MRX, MRX refuses to take it and tells him that the key had an IP tracker on it, and they know where he is, and they took a picture of him on his computer, so they Trojaned the key, which I'm assuming that the key in this case is probably some sort of VPN endpoint, like a almost like a Tor browser or something like that, some way to get into that specific dark web.
Yeah,
it had to be an executable of some kind.
Well, that's one thing I wasn't certain about, and having, you know, a technical background, that's what I'm trying to figure out, is what that is. You know, normal people would just gloss over that. I was like, what could that key be that it would work that way and they'd have the IP tracker on it and all that stuff? So
I guess it could be a document that had the Tor address or something, and the document was Trojaned and had like a macro, but there's no guarantee that somebody who's technically smart wouldn't run that through a sandbox and pull that out.
Right.
But then what technically smart person would just trust an executable that a hacker gives you either? So
right. You're
right. I don't think there's any good answer to this one.
Yeah. I think it was more like, you know, the Deus Ex Machina, where they just used it as a get out of jail free card in order to advance the plot.
That's fair. Yeah. So he uses the key, and then he's told that it's an IP tracker, and the mafia people are there immediately.
Right.
Like it takes a picture of his face. Yeah. It takes a picture of his face. And then they're right in front of his computer, like, you know, 30 feet away, walking in the room. They literally had to be right outside the front door.
Yep. So he ends up having to run away from these guys, and they chase him.
But he doesn't shut down the computer. He doesn't even shut the computer. He doesn't close the picture, but they didn't even look at the picture. Like, they could have like come around the computer and looked and been like, oh, here's what the guy we're chasing looks like. They didn't even look at it.
Well, also, I think if these guys were real hackers, though, they would have taken the computer as well, because who knows what other valuable information could have been down there about him and where he was at or so, whatever.
Given that he used a public IP, he was probably still fairly protected. Like, she should have shut the computer and run. The shutting the computer would have put it in, and taken it with him. That would have put it to sleep.
Yeah, unless he was running, if he was running full disk encryption, locking the computer may have been enough. But of course, you don't know what kind of tools those guys have as well, because that doesn't fully, the encryption key still may be in memory at that point, depending on how he's doing it. But unwise. But of course, if you're stressed, you may not be thinking clearly either.
I guess.
Not a complete stretch.
So, and then he immediately goes back to his hotel where he's been hiding and finds his friend's bodies, supposedly, which doesn't make any sense because they said they were only using public access points and there's no way for the mafia to have tracked him back to this hotel. And I don't know, maybe if they had pulled back his photo and done a photo recognition, and then maybe if he'd been the one to pay for the hotel, then maybe they could have tried, but how did they beat him back here and then not wait for him? They knew he was out there. Why wouldn't they just be sitting there waiting for him to come back?
Oh, well, that's a good point. I hadn't thought about that one.
But it turns out there's a reason for that, but we'll get to it.
So after this, he's obviously freaked out because all of his friends are dead. So if he goes to the cops and says, "Hey, I want to make a deal. I can get you this Mr. X and the Russian mafia guys together."
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah. So they agree and he lays a trap for Mr. X, who falls for it and forces him to use a glass break, which is similar to the IP.
It's like the subway key. It's the same thing. It's a metaphor of some kind.
Right. So he's used basically the same trick that Mr. X used to find him, he uses to find Mr. X. And in the case of Mr. X, the cops are on top of him right away in New York City, and they nab him right out of
the coffee shop. This one's a little better because they do show the cops like driving there. So it shows that the cops aren't quite there, but still he would have had time to run out of the coffee shop. So it's a little weird. It's a little bit better, but it's still a little like he didn't run. He just stayed in the coffee shop and waited for the cops to show up.
And I'm sure cops' response times to something like this are minutes.
So, and I'm thinking the glass break, I'm wondering, like, glass and ice are very similar. Like, I'm thinking about a lot of those old early like Neuromancer novels, like where Icebreaker was used to get through firewalls. Yeah. So I'm wondering if because this was in the dark web, and what was separating them in the visualization was a door with glass. And so he used this to break the glass in the door and reach around and open the door. And I'm wondering if that was effectively like a firewall or something, or I don't know, maybe the separation between forums. And so I'm wondering if this is kind of like like intrusion countermeasure stuff from like old cyberpunk novels. Although I don't know.
Yeah, it could have been a callback to that. But either way, it was kind of obfuscated. Yeah. And a technical person would have to make some kind of guesses about what it really is supposed to mean. Whereas, regular people.
And for them to have done that, like he reached over and grabbed it off the wall, like how would they have got, was that in his computer? Was that in the forum? Like what's the metaphor here? it breaks my brain. It hurts.
Right. I just try not to overthink that. Because I think those two, the subway key and the glass break, from a technical standpoint, I think are the two weakest parts of the technical parts of the whole movie. I mean, there are some other plot problems we'll get to in a minute that exists as well.
And those both happened because of the metaphor, because they made the darknet be a subway car. It's because they were stretching the metaphor. They're trying to create a cool, like they're trying to put a real life tool, like a Trojan, into the metaphor of the subway car.
Mm-hmm.
And it just doesn't quite work.
Yeah. But outside of that, the technical parts of the movie I thought were pretty good. So after he does that, they catch Mr. X. And of course, right after they catch the Russian mafia guys. So everything's hunky-dory. And he wants to go into witness protection since he's exposed this. And what the investigator seems to piece together based on different aspects of the film is that he has multiple personality disorder.
Yeah, I think she's initially clued in when she goes to talk to I can't remember the name of the girl, but she goes to talk to the girl and the girl's like, "Oh yeah, I haven't seen him since school." And the investigator's like, "Wait, I thought you've seen him. He said you've seen him multiple times in the last several months." She's like, "No, I haven't seen him at all. He's a freak." And she's like, "Hold on.
Right. So she starts looking into his story, and there's a whole bunch of stuff that doesn't add up. So she comes to the conclusion that he suffers from multiple personality disorder, which they then disclose that his mother also had and maybe genetically have been passed on to him. And then they kind of hint on it a little bit when she goes to where he grew up at, and she goes into his room. He's got a Fight Club poster on the wall. And this is kind of reminiscent of Mr. Robot, if you're familiar with that TV series from USA, which was quite good. And then she tells him, well, you've got a personality disorder, so you can't go into witness protection. So we're just going to have to throw you in jail. Which she ends up feeling guilty about it and ends up helping him escape, I guess. I thought that was really thin on the reasoning behind why she decided to take pity on this guy and let him go. Because during the course of him relaying this entire story to her, he freely admits that he did all these things. He broke the law many times, regardless of whether it was him or him and his multiple personalities working together to break the law. And yet she still lets him go, which I didn't think made a whole lot of sense at all. And then after she lets him go, it turns out he was basically Kaiser Soze-ing her the whole time.
Did you see his haircut at the end with the dyed hair?
Yeah, like hers. Well, dyeing his hair the same color as this female investigator.
Well, so not only that, but when I went back to look at Hackers, his hair looked kind of like the one of the lead characters in Hackers, like the blonde.
Yeah, what's his name? Johnny something.
John Lee Miller?
Yeah, who plays Sherlock Holmes in that, Elementary.
Interesting. Yeah, I just thought that was kind of weird.
Yeah, that could have been another callback to that movie, maybe. So he was Kaiser Soze-er, and all of his friends did really exist. He did get with the girl. She was playing it as well. And they all ride off into the sunset. So overall, from a technical standpoint, I thought the movie is really good with those couple of instances with Key and the glass break, which kind of didn't make a whole lot of sense. There's some plot issues with the way that they acted sometimes, wearing masks when they shouldn't have been and wearing them when they were.
Because there was one time where the police were coming after them in the library and they put on their mask to run around the library when they should have just split off and just walked out of the library. The police had no photographic idea who they were. They could have just walked out past the police.
And just act like normal people and they would have been fine. But they wanted to put on their mask so they'd get caught. There's just some weird aspects of that. Like I said, the romance subplot could have done completely without that thing. The way that they portrayed the Russian mafia, I thought was kind of bad or poorly done. But overall, I liked it. I thought it was, from a Hacker movie, it was better than like Black Hat or Hackers or most of the Hacker movies that you're going to see in the States anyway. I'd say it's rivaling how accurate as far as what most of Mr. Robot was like. It was very similar vein there.
Yeah, I was pretty happy with it. It was pretty good. It was a little bit distracting sometimes to have to read the subtitles. It distracted you from kind of what was going on. Like sometimes trying to watch what the code was doing and like things were going on while simultaneously reading the subtitles was difficult. But that's
right.
Common issue with, subtitles.
Yeah, I actually rewound quite a few times because of that to then watch what I had read to see what was going on. But definitely check it out if you're all right with four movies with subtitles. As like I said, from a technical aspect, it's pretty good.
Yep, I agree. Do we need to come up with a stupid rating scale? It's like 7 out of 10 Hackers, 6 out of 9 Robots. 7 out of 9 Borg. That's fine. We don't need a rating scale. So would you recommend people see it?
Absolutely.
I agree. I think that this is worth a watch.
And especially what you don't see in a lot of Hacker movies, like I said, is the mix of the physical and the logical or the virtual. Because they show these guys using phone boxes and they reference a little bit of freaking in there with these guys
do it all.
Radio contest. So yeah, I thought it was good. Definitely should check it out. I said about an order, about an hour and 40 minutes or so, or an hour and 45 minutes. If you get Netflix, it's free. So definitely check it out. Well, not free, but you're already paying for it. There's a link to the IMDb page in the show notes. So thanks for listening to the Secure Serengeti podcast. Follow us at Serengeti Sec on Twitter. Subscribe and listen on your favorite podcast app.